This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Shortly past 1:30 in the afternoon, we welcome you back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN1290. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. Jets and the Flyers tomorrow evening at MTS Center, 8 p.m., late night puck drop for that fine contest. Ezzy, you're doing pre and post?
Yep.
There you go. You can look forward to listening to that tomorrow evening. Richie, you'll be in Palm Springs?
Yeah, Drew, tell everyone.
I just did. No problem. My pleasure to do that. You'll be there with Remus. You and Remus, nice little vacation, the two of you guys together?
Yeah, just the two of us.
Yeah, they'll be nice and romantic for the two of you.
What about a hashtag Leah?
Yeah, hashtag Leo will be there too as well. Better being in Palm Springs than in Russia right now, I would suggest, with the collapse of the ruble. Big problems with the Russian economy. A lot of that is related to the sanctions that the countries in the West have put in place over the Russian aggression, invasion of the Ukraine. A lot of things about that nature. We don't want to get too deep into those because we're obviously not experts on that. Slava Malamud of Sport Express was on TSN 1050 in Toronto earlier this week. He spoke about the problems the KHL is currently facing.
Thanks to all the petrodollars, all the oil and natural gas money that was invested in the KHL from the get-go, they were able to get top-notch talent, at least showcase good hockey. Nowadays, with the ruble crashing, it's pretty clear that next year there's not going to be too many foreign stars playing in the league, and the focus now is to hold what they have, namely Kovalchuk and Radulov, the two biggest stars. I mean, they're probably going to hold on to them no matter what. They'll find ways to pay them. The rest of the guys will probably have to go.
It's almost like the KHL didn't become the real rival to the NHL that people were saying it was going to be. That, you know, a failing economy and a not really stable system is going to end up dooming the KHL really before it begins to even consider being a threat.
Well, I don't
to
think
the
it's
NHL.
Really a threat. I mean, do we think it's permanent, this issue? I mean, the NHL faced a similar issue financially with the Canadian dollar. Maybe not exactly similar, but the economies.
Well, there was never an issue the NHL was going to collapse.
Now, I appreciate that, but the league was in dire straits. There's a bunch of teams here, Drew, in Canada that were possibly going to move. There was times when people thought there'd only be two teams in Canada.
Sure.
So, I mean, there are ebbs and flows in these things. But, I mean, people need to realize also, though, and Eric DeHatrick's book, King of Russia, has a really good chronicles of kind of a year in the KHL with Dave King. And people, if people have caught that book, it's not as if these teams were always paying their players on time when the league was going really well.
Yeah.
So it's not exactly shocking to know that the teams aren't paying their players on time now when there's, you know, economic trouble.
You read about former Winnipeg Jet Tim Stapleton, and, you know, there were some accusations that they were going to go on strike, and, you know, Chris Johnston wrote about this, and he's saying that at no point were they going to... Like, there's a lot of turbulence going on in Russia right now, and you have players not being paid. Apparently some teams haven't played their players at all this year, Rich.
Yeah, is that surprising? I mean, again, the book talks about the fact that these guys don't always get paid on time, and obviously, players that go over there don't think it's going to be this bad as you know, the issues that you spoke about. At the same time, I don't think any players from North America, at least, are not cautioned on some of these things being issues beforehand. I have a hard time believing that.
Well, you know, Tim Stapleton, former Winnipeg mm-hmm. Jet, spoke to Chris Johnston about you know, life in Russia, life playing in the KHL. And he said, you know, he was completely aware of all the risks associated with it. Mm-hmm. But he said the amount of money he was offered to play in the KHL paled in comparison to what he was offered
the
in
AHL.
The NHL.
Or the AHL.
He said he was
He's not an NHL forward, really.
Pardon me?
He's not really an NHL forward.
Well, he says that the Florida Panthers offered him a contract in 2013. He says the Blue Jackets extended him a two-way contract last season.
Well, two-way, so there he goes.
Two-way,
AHL, 90, 80 grand, yeah.
Yeah, sure, exactly. Probably a 100, 600 contract. 100K in the AHL, maybe. 600K in the NHL. But, you know, all of a sudden, that contract, the one that he signed that was so valuable in Russia... Well, guess what? The ruble's only at 50 cents, or 50% of what the contract he signed was for. So that lucrative contract is no longer lucrative. It's not like he's getting paid in euros or in U.S. dollars over there. He's getting paid in rubles, and, you know, if they're not worth anything, well, guess what? Maybe the KHL isn't an option anymore well, for guys like him and other guys.
Right, and you hear that there might be as many as three, four, five teams that might actually fold. Riga being one of them, Atlanta, Bratislava. You know, I think there might be more, and I think that's actually going to benefit you know, the NHL and professional hockey in North America. I think you're going to see less Canadians and Americans going over there. If you don't know that you're going to get paid, or you might get half of what you're paid, or you don't know, apparently there's some issues too with the ruble being transferred into euros and it's not worth as much, or I don't think as many people, it's going to be, what I'm saying is I don't think it's going to be as attractive. You might maybe have the chance to make more money, Drew, in Russia. And you might, and that might mean more guys are maybe going to the Swedish Elite League or the Finnish League. But if you don't, you might make more money, but who knows if you're ever going to see it.
Well, for Winnipeg Jets fans, I think this is especially relevant because we've heard a lot about Alex Burmistrov and that he's, you know, obviously currently playing for Akbars Kazan.
Yep.
And that, you know, he would plan to come over back to the NHL next season anyways. Well, all of a sudden, if the KHL isn't paying what it used to pay, or if the stability of the league is in question, what had seemed like he was going to come back to North America probably becomes a foregone conclusion, even if it is at a pay cut, because he's not going to be making as much in the NHL as he had in the KHL this year and last year.
Yeah, maybe Alexander Burmistrov comes back. Maybe that increases his trade value if the Jets want to move him and other players of the sort. I mean, maybe Ilya Kovalchuk is going to come back and play for the Devils and play those remaining 7 years of his contract.
Wouldn't that create a questionable situation for the NHL front office about Ilya Kovalchuk? All of a sudden he's retired, now he's unretired. How does that affect the salary cap and the entire situation over there if Ilya Kovalchuk all of a sudden comes back to the NHL prior to the age of 35?
That would be interesting.
That would be interesting.
Yeah.
That would be a lot of, 29 other teams might have a bit of a problem with whatever decision Gary Bettman makes at that point in time.
I think Lamoriello would love to have Kovalchuk back. Look at the team right now. You're not taking Kovalchuk back.
I think that whole thing stunk to the high heavens the day they announced it. And it had to do with the ownership of the Devils and the way that the ownership purchased the team, because it was all happening simultaneously.
And they were fined and they lost that draft pick, or they got a lower draft pick.
Well, that's one issue.
They lost it and got it back, but they got it back at the end of the first round.
Right.
That was the cap circumvention issue. That was way back when they signed the initial contract.
It's all related, though.
Sure, it's all related, but this is I'm talking about is much more about the, how Ilya Kovalchuk did or didn't count on the Devils' salary cap when he went back to KHL.
In terms of the quality of hockey, sure, if the KHL were to collapse, the NHL would benefit from it because there's still some top-end talent that would come here to North America and play on some of the lines that right now some of the guys in the National Hockey League aren't that dynamic on those bottom lines. But there's not a ton of those players. And the quality of hockey is not there anywhere close to what it is in the NHL. So as a big picture, I don't see how much of a huge effect it has on the National Hockey League. It has a bigger effect to me on the AHL or in the European leagues, Swedish Elite League and Swiss leagues and all those leagues.
Let's go back to, before we go to break, let's go back to Slava Malamud, and he speaks about the state of affairs in the KHL right now. We'll do that, and then we'll head to break on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Well, it's obviously uncertain right now. At this point, to quote Jeff Glass, the American goalie for Lada Toliati, who is one of the better KHL players, it's not on a very solid footing. And obviously Glass said it while being a player in the KHL, so he was forced to apologize it on Twitter today, but I'm pretty sure that he meant what he said. And first of all, the league has just undergone a leadership change. They got rid of Alexander Medvedev, the longtime president, who was the KHL is basically his brainchild. He was the driving force behind the whole thing. He was also a member of Putin's inner circle, but apparently there was some inner struggle there between him and Vladislav Tretiak, the head of the Russian Hockey Federation. And eventually Putin asked Medvedev to step down, and he was replaced. Now the new guy comes in, Dmitry Chernyshenko, who was the head of the Sochi organizing committee, and he organized this meeting with the GMs today to address the leadership change and everything that's going on and financially in Russia right now. And the takeaways from this meeting are not very encouraging for the KHL. Obviously, with the ruble doing what it's doing, most of the it doesn't really affect the KHL financially short term, because it pay, all the Russian-based teams pay their players in rubles. It affects the players greatly. They all those NHL third-liners who came to Russia to have their first million-dollar deal ever, now making below the NHL minimum, far below, because of the inflation. But short-term, it does not affect the NHL's profit, the KHL's profits. It will affect them long-term, obviously. And it looks like a bunch of teams are going to fold, to make the long story short.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, online TSN1290.ca. This segment of the program is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Mark forward at Rumors tonight, and keep in mind there are still a few tickets available for their New Year's Eve celebrations. Two shows on New Year's Eve, 6 p.m. and 10 p.m., featuring comedian Andrew Norelli. Check him out online, rumorscomedyclub.com, to purchase tickets for a list of upcoming performers. Gentlemen, tomorrow evening, the Winnipeg Jets and the Philadelphia Flyers do battle at MTS Center for the first time this year, the only visit the Flyers will make this season, unless both teams make the Stanley Cup Finals, I suppose. So it'll be the only visit the Flyers will make this year to the MTS Center. Always a fun atmosphere when Philly comes to town, of course, given the historic ties between the Flyers organization and the province of Manitoba, ties that are even increasing now with Ron Hextall being the general manager there. Looking at the matchups in the game, you know, how do you think the Jets deploy their forward groups against the Flyers' defensive core for the most part?
I think, first off, Drew, I think this game is going to be one of a lot of defensive zone, probably defensive zone turnovers, and I think a lot of bank it off the glass kind of plays here, because you're looking at both defenses, I think, have some flaws. So the Jets are going to try and keep it simple against a pretty offensively inclined squad, a lot of talent. I think the Flyers, the same way, going to have a tough time dealing with the Jets' size and speed, and even physicality at times. So if you're looking at it, I mean, Byfuglien apparently is all right. And so
on the ice, sorry, I meant to mention that off the top. On the ice, skated at the skate this morning. So he's perfectly fine by the sounds of it.
So you can assume that the Byfuglien pairing will draw Claude Giroux and Jakub Voracek's line. So then you're looking at, you know, the I think the second probably most offensively inclined line on Philly is probably Wayne Simmonds, Braden Shen, and Scott Laughton. I mean, there's, you know, again, it's a little bit top heavy. We talked about the lack of depth there. So then, and then you have Matt Reed, Umberger, Couturier. I don't think the Jets with those second, third pairings, I mean, I don't think there's going to be too particular about that, especially being at home. They'll be more comfortable with it. But I think you're going to see Byfuglien's pairing line up against the Giroux line. That's the main one. And if you look at it from Philly's perspective, I mean, you're going to try and match up your top defensive pairing, I would say, against, obviously, the little lad Wheeler line. But you look at their defensive pairings, I mean, I guess you're looking at probably Coburn and Nick Schultz, maybe Grossman and Streit, McDonald and Shen. I mean, I'm pretty sure those are all the same. And in reality, I mean, I would anticipate probably Coburn and Schultz get drawing that matchup. And I think the second, then you might see McDonald and Shen probably line up against the Scheifele line. And then the third pairing, probably see Streit and Grossman up against the Jets third. And that's what I would say as the road matchups. But as you look through this Philly roster, you're noticing the lack of depth up front. You're noticing the lack of shutdown defensemen on the back. And we haven't even talked about their goaltending yet. Jets should be able to take care of tomorrow's game.
We don't know who their goaltender is going to be. As we mentioned, Steve Mason really just had some sort of freak injury at practice yesterday. So I imagine Ray Emery is going to play for the Flyers tonight in Toronto. Flyers are going to be on the second half of back-to-back tomorrow. Their backup goaltender is now Rob Zepp. He's been a veteran in the European leagues.
I don't think he has any NHL experience.
He doesn't have any. He's been playing for Lehigh Valley in the AHL so far this season, many years overseas in Europe. You know, Ray Emery has been pretty awful for the Flyers so far this year. 899 save percentage, 3.04 goals against, and who knows what you have in Rob Zepp. So it'll be curious to see what the Flyers deploy in terms of their goaltending.
I don't think it really matter. I mean, you're looking at having a weakness in goal in any event.
Right. I guess it's interesting to see if they go with Ray Emery back-to-back, or they give Rob Zepp his first NHL game. I think regardless, it's going to be a tight game, late start on Sunday night at 8 o'clock tomorrow. And, I think Richie nailed it there. I mean, the Claude Giroux, Jakub Voracek line right there, that's the key as far as the Jets. They have to focus in on that, obviously. There's other guys on the Flyers that you have to worry about. But, Dustin Byfuglien and Ben Chiarot did a nice job yesterday. And they've been, really good in the half dozen games or so they've played together. And that's the line that you got to shut down. And, Braden Schenn and players like Wayne Simmons and Couturier, they can score too. But you'll take the chances. Those are the main lines. And, you have to hope that, Party and Postma are able to match up, play limited minutes and match up well against the Flyers' second and or third line, right, Rich? And then you look at the Jets, and again, I look at, the Jets are playing pretty well here, and they've got three lines that Paul Maurice rolls out on a consistent basis. And we talked about, the Lowry, Halaschuk, Kane line looked good yesterday against the Bruins, especially when they got them matched up, I thought, against Matt Barkowski and Dennis Seidenberg there. We saw it on the first goal. It was kind of put the puck on net and crash the net and get rebounds and dirty goals. So I think that this is going to be a close game. There's probably going to, I imagine, be some more goals scored than the game yesterday, but it's going to be a tight game, and the Jets again, they might be going up against a lesser opponent in the Philadelphia Flyers, but it's at least for me, I don't think this is going to be, you're not going to see a game like them beating the Buffalo Sabres 5-1. The Flyers are a better team than that. Regardless, I don't care what the standings are right now.
Yeah.
So it'll be another grinded out win. That's what they're going to have to do until they get some of their defensemen back. They're going to have to grind out these 3-2, 2-1 games. That's what the Jets are going to have to do. And, they've been getting the goaltending that allows them to do it.
Mm-hmm. Let's head into break listening to Paul Maurice's scrum from earlier today. The Jets practiced at the MTS Iceplex. Here's Paul Maurice speaking with the Winnipeg media following today's practice.
How big a relief was it to see a 33 walk onto the ice today?
Yeah, no, it was good. We got a good report on him after the game. It took a little while to get it, but good report on him. And then go back and watch the game this morning, you realize what an impact he has on the game, and he's a critical piece for sure back there.
Where did he take the stick? Something looked like he was grabbing his arm. But
No, it was in the face.
Okay.
It was in the face. It's hard to tell because it's a fairly distant camera angle exactly where it got him, but he got it in the chops.
Do you know who was it? Which Bruin caught him?
No.
From watching the tape, anything else stand out about the game itself?
It's the same thing. Our compete was good through the game. We got in trouble off faceoffs more than anything else. We stayed on the forecheck probably better than I gave our team credit for, and stayed physical better than I had thought from the bench. And Boston, they worked hard. They generated things off those faceoffs. That was our big challenge last night. But played better in the third than in the second, which is a good sign.
Do you know how far you're going to go with this back and forth with the goalies?
No idea. So the reason is it wasn't a plan to do it. We talked earlier about shortening the duration that Mike was out, and then his play was just so good. He has to go. Each goalie now deserves to be back in the net after their performance. And now that it's gone for more than just a couple of games of rotation, a one-off night by a guy doesn't take him out of that rotation. So they're playing well, and I'm really concentrating on not overthinking it. We'll go with this as long as it feels good and as long as it works.
Has it been a challenge at all? I know you're a guy who likes to ride your number one guy when you can.
No, it hasn't, because it's solely performance-driven. You look back at, Pav gives up a goal against Buffalo, plays really strong. You'd have no problem at all starting him the next night, except you look back at Hutch's last game, and even in that game against Anaheim, I had no problem at all with his game. They deserve to go back in. So it's really, again, don't overthink this. You got two guys playing well, and let them keep going.
What impressed you about Grant Clutzen's game last night? Obviously, he played more than usual.
Played more. breaks in kind of a new partner. I think they were both good together, and then we're going to give him some more room with how he handles the puck playing his offside. It's a challenge, especially against a team that finishes checks and that's aggressive like Boston. We'll see it again with Philadelphia. It's not easy playing your offside, having to move the puck in a different manner, and he handled it well. You know, an awful lot of speed. They've got three or four guys up front with great speed and skill. A couple of world-class players there, and then depth through their lineup. And they've got a good lineup and a good team. So a lot of speed. Not quite in the style of Boston's game, but really dangerous off the rush if you allow them to be. They're going to get to the front of the net. They've got players like Simmons that like to work the front of the net. That will be similar to Boston, pucks to the net from there. So it'll be quite a tilt.
I know you liked his game early when he wasn't necessarily producing offense, but when do you think Matthew Perreault really started to feel comfortable?
I thought there was a big improvement in his game when he went to the wing. And when he there's a different sense of responsibility. So think about how he comes in. He comes into a team that's really trying to learn how to play well defensively. We put an awful lot of pressure on the center iceman. He wants to come in and be part of that team and do a good job. And he was doing a fine job, but he didn't want to make a mistake. And part of it, when you handle the puck the way Matthew does, and you handle it as much, you're going to make mistakes. So we were fine with his play. We took him and put him on the wing. We moved him to the wing. I think he relaxed a little bit, and he's got a different responsibility, and there's more freedom for our wingers to do things in the offensive zone. There's more pressure on our center iceman. And that's when the confidence comes, and now I'd have no problem putting him back in at center. He's in a different mindset now. He's also had a couple of months with what we're trying to do defensively, so he's more comfortable with that.
Didn't play defense?
We did the list. I did have two guys skate by me the other day and declare that they absolutely could not play defense. And we were thinking about taking our forwards out, see where the best backward skaters were. Just make a chart of that and say you're in first. But no, I think we got a bigger lineup of guys just declaring themselves as forwards. Absolutely not going back.
Seeing your home record improve throughout, you know, even when it wasn't where you guys wanted it, you were always happy with the fact that your guys were focused on the process.
Yep.
Are we now seeing the positive results?
I think the advantage of playing at home in our building is strictly energy. So if you look at the philosophy of the game, your record on the road shouldn't be as good because you don't get last change, and our road record's very strong. So maybe that tells you that your matchups aren't as important as the flow and the energy. So the real advantage in our building is giving our fans enough to be excited about, not necessarily in terms of goals. Like, that building was as loud as a building we've had all year. They knew what we're dealing with. I think they have a really, because the fans are so into the Jets, they know exactly what we're going through, and they really appreciate it. They've appreciated the penalty kills sometimes as much as the offensive chances. So there was great energy, and that's, for us, where our home advantage would come. We've got to give the fans a reason to appreciate the work level. I think we're doing that now better than we did at the start of the year. They appreciate the compete here. They understand the advantage of being in a Canadian city like this is they understand the game. They know both sides. So they understand the value of a great penalty killer, a block shot, or a finish check, or a puck that just gets battled out. You can feel it and almost hear it in terms of what they appreciate in the game. It's completely different than other markets that don't have that kind of hockey experience. So for us now, we've got some adversity, and they see a shift where the guys are just going as hard as they possibly can. They give that positive feedback, and it means something. You know, Jay Harrison picks up the puck for the first time last night and brings it up on a control breakout, and the fans, you know, it gets loud in the building. They watch the game. They understand what's going on in the game. So we've got to give them a reason, and certainly they've paid us back with lots of extra energy, and we need it.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
2 hours down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN1290. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. Let's head out now on The Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He's the Minnesota Wild color analyst on Fox Sports North, Mike Greenlay. Mike, good afternoon, and thanks for joining us.
Hey, my pleasure, guys.
Mike obviously brought you on to talk about the Wild. The Jets and the Wild are going to have two very important matchups right after Christmas. Happy holidays to you and yours, of course. Why haven't the Wild reached the preseason expectations so far this season?
Well, I think there's a couple of reasons. They've only had their top 4D in the lineup for now maybe 11 games, all at once, I mean. They've had plenty of illness go through their defensive core. They've had a couple injuries go through their defensive core, and usually it's been to one of their top 4D or two at the same time. So it's been kind of tough, and that's obviously where they start their attack, is from their own end. In games where they have all four of their top four, they generate a lot of offense because they work the puck up nicely out of their zone and would go with speed, and they are a speed team, so that's something that they need to do. I think a little bit of inconsistency in the nets too. I mean, you have a young goaltender in Darcy Kuemper who's certainly talented and certainly the future here, but you know, he still needs to work and get a body of work that on his resume. I mean, he still has only, I think, maybe 54 career games to his name. And as you well know, there's a lot of goaltenders that play that many games in one season. So, you know, he's still working on his game. Nicholas Backstrom, of course, hasn't played a lot of hockey in the last year just because of injury last year. So, there's a few reasons. Wild also need to be a little bit better in finishing. But I think for the most part, they've just seen a situation where, you know, they've kind of languished a little bit and maybe lost a little bit of a confidence just because they weren't getting the finish that they were looking for. And so hopefully that consistency comes around for them here in the near future.
Hey, Mike, last year at about this time, the Wild seemed to kind of have a similar issue in terms of reaching expectations, and there was rumors of Mike Yeo's job security, which you'd assume was taken care of at the end of the season with an extension. But do you see any similarities between the team at this point last year and the team right now?
Well, last year, again, they had different situations. They were going through goaltenders like Cordwood, but you know what? This team should be definitely doing a little bit better than last year's team, but you know, still trying to find I think a little bit of an identity on different lines. The Wild haven't had a lot of injuries on their top six or even their top nine forwards, but they still have had to move lots of players around and try and find chemistry. The power play still has been a problem as it was last year. So, the Wild is trying to find something that works, and not just works for a game or two, but on a more consistent basis. You add Thomas Vanek to the mix this year, and you're trying to find where he goes and who he fits in with. They put him with Granlin and Parisi, and there's been an uptick in his game because of that, but you know, you hope that can kind of establish itself as a top line for the Wild. So hard to compare the two seasons, obviously, but still, I think the confidence in the forwards' games and maybe in finishing and scoring and the power play, those all kind of go together. So the Wild's still trying to find what will work for them in that regard, because they have the personnel. I mean, you look up and down their top six or nine forwards. I mean, you have plenty of personnel that can put fucks in the net.
Mike, at the end of November, the Wild signed Marco Scandella to a five-year contract extension. What were your thoughts on the contract that was given to Marco Scandella?
Well, I think anytime you can lock a guy like that up, it's just terrific. I mean, he's terrific now, and I think he's going to get even better. I mean, he's strong, he's fast, he's willing to jump into the play. He's got a bomb for a shot. He's got all the elements that you need for a top four type defenseman. So I'm, you know, they've done that with a few guys now. I mean, with Charlie Coyle, with Jonas Brodin, Nino Niederreiter, they've locked a few of their young core up, and they continue to try and do that, obviously, so that these guys can grow up together. And so it's been fun seeing some of these guys develop. Marco Scandella certainly has taken yet another step, and fully expect him to continue to do that. I'm really happy that they got him locked in.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Our guest is Mike Greenlay, Minnesota Wild color analyst on Fox Sports North. Mike, Thomas Vanek was the big free agent signing in the offseason. It had been rumored that he was going to come to Minnesota for pretty much all last year, and it came to fruition. He's only got 4 goals in 30 games so far this year. Do you sense frustration within the organization regarding his play?
I would say so. I mean, I think the expectation was that he was going to be, in some cases, maybe a little more of a liability defensively, but you are willing to give up that if you're going to have finish on the other end, if you're going to have a guy that's putting the puck in the net for you. And so we also thought that just because of the fact that he gave up a lot of money and more years with other teams to come sign with the Wild, that he would certainly, you know, feel a comfort level and also find a niche here in Minnesota. So that certainly is still the hope. I think early on for him, you know, just trying to get into the team system and find where his compatibility was with different players, that certainly was one thing. But I think at this point, I think there's been a bit of an uptick in his play, and hopefully that continues to grow because, they need him to contribute. I mean, they acquired him to address certain areas. One of them was a power play, and one of them was just overall goals per game. And if he has 4 right now, well, you need him to have, you need him to have a more consistent, push offensively in order for the Wild to really reap the benefits of the type of player that he is.
Mike, you look up the middle on the team, and you know Mikko Koivu and Michael Granlund being the top 2 centers combined have 8 goals in 60 games. Why, Koivu's not necessarily just a natural scorer by any means, but how do they get more production out of those 2 guys scoring-wise?
Well, I think Mikko has been producing more lately, so that's good. But I think for both of them, honestly, it's about shooting the puck. I mean, Mikael Granlund needs to shoot the puck more. He has a great shot, but I think he defers. Right now he's, even early on in the year, he was playing with Parise and Tominville. I think for young players, sometimes they defer a little bit too much to guys that are veterans. And, so that's one thing. Now he's playing with Vanek and Parise on either side of him. So in terms of Granlund, so he just needs to shoot the puck more. I think he's a terrific player. He needs to play in the middle of the ice. And I think he needs to generate, goals by shooting more. So, still a lot of potential in his game. For Mikko Koivu, I mean, a lot of people don't fully appreciate what he does, but, I mean, you look at his face-off production for the Wild. You look at his 200-foot game, the ability to keep the puck in the offensive zone with his size and strength and the ability to be the first one back in the defensive zone. So there's a lot of parts of his game that aren't always, statistically trackable, I guess you'd say. And yes, you want him scoring, no question, especially if he's going to be on the top power play unit. But he provides so much in other areas. Like, once again, though, once he starts shooting the puck more, he's going to score more because he also has a good game in that regard. And we've seen that a little bit lately. I mean, we've seen him shoot the puck more and we've seen him score more because of it. So hopefully that's a predictor of what's going to happen here come into the second half of the season.
Mike, you mentioned Nino Niederreiter earlier, and I wanted to ask you about him because he's a player I really like, and I think you'd agree he had a breakout season last year for the Minnesota Wild, his first full NHL season. He's already matched his goal total from last year with 14 goals. How surprised are you that he's leading the team in goals and he's got this many goals already? He might even get up to 40.
I'm not surprised that he's playing as well as he is, and I'm not surprised at his production. I guess what I'm surprised at is that he's leading the team in goals. I mean, because we talked about a few other players that, should by rights have, more goals than they do. It's not so much about Nino's game. It's about the fact that he really shouldn't be leading in goals. He should be one of maybe 2 or 3 players that have that kind of production. But I love Nino's game. I mean, he's a no-nonsense guy. I mean, he crashes the net. He takes a beating in front. He's got great hands. I mean, great finish around the net. Very quick moves. Good hockey sense. And it's just great to watch him play. Love that he continues to develop. And I don't think we've seen his upside. I don't think we've seen his top side yet. He's the kind of guy who could really continue to develop and become like you said, maybe a 30-40 goal scorer in this league, and that might even happen this year. So the other nice wrinkle is that he's also a very physical guy. He's playing on a line tonight with Matt Cook coming back in the lineup after missing 22 with a lower body injury. It's going to be Coyle in the middle with Cook and Niederreiter on either side of him. You talk about a crash and bash line that can maybe finish as well. I'm excited to see what they can do tonight in this game, because I think that type of line can really be dominant. They play a smart game, they play a physical game, and they can maybe create some offense on the tail end of that. I'm actually excited to see what that line can do.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Our guest is Mike Greenlee. Mike is the Minnesota Wild color analyst on Fox Sports North.
Mike, it's tough. I mean, there's not a ton of market out there for goaltending. I'm not sure if the Wild is even interested in looking outside of the organization. Is that something you think might come up down the road? And if the Wild are teetering on the outside of the playoffs like they are right now and the goaltending hasn't been up to par?
Well, you know what? It is funny. I was talking to Chuck Fletcher just maybe a week or two ago, and I said, what's out there right now? And he said, at the time when I was talking to him, he said, well, right now the only guys that are out there are Thomas Volkoon, who is, you know, question mark at the time because, you know, he had been out with blood clots and whatnot. And the other guy is Jose Theodore, who hasn't played in a few years, but, you know, he's stays in shape and you never know, you bring him in. But in other words, there's no one out there. And now we know that Volkoon's retired. So the point is, there's not really much out there unless you go and actually make a trade with a team that has a current goaltender, that, you know, and then you're obviously giving up assets for that. So I think the hope is obviously that they can mature Kemper along enough and give him a deep enough body of work that he can maybe fast track to being a serviceable number one goaltender with Nicholas Backstrom filling in different spots. And the hope is that can continue to grow. I think for Kemper, it's about his consistency. He's obviously a very talented goaltender, big goaltender, and when he's aggressive, he can really make a difference. But they have to have that happen. And like I said, it's they're hopeful that they don't have to do that down the stretch. But you never know. Like I said, I guess you cross that bridge when you come to it. Right now, they're going with their guys, and hopefully that works for them.
Mike Yost signed a 3-year contract extension in the spring of this year in May. But the way the Wild have started off here, and they obviously we've talked about it, they're struggling a little bit. I still expect them to turn it around. But is there any reason to believe that Mike Yost isn't on solid ground, I guess, with the general manager and ownership?
I would hope not, because I think he's a great communicator. I think he's great for this team. He needs to have, any coach needs a response from his players, and until you lose the locker room, I think you need to keep pushing and keep trying and keep prodding and keep trying different things and get these guys going, because at the end of the day, the coach is not the one who goes out on the ice and does it. So I don't think he's lost any of the confidence in the ownership or in the room. It's the players know that they need to take it off on themselves to kind of bear down and become the kind of team that is a threat every night. I think, like I said, with the top 4D now healthy for the Wild and hopefully stay that way, I think this team's going to generate a lot of offense. They need the forwards to finish, obviously. But I don't think Mike Yost is in jeopardy in those terms. And like I said, I hope they respond for him, because he's been a great communicator and he's been a good coach for this team. And they certainly need to kind of give that back to him, the players do, in terms of their effort.
Mike Greenlee is the Minnesota Wild color analyst on Fox Sports North. Mike, we appreciate your time this afternoon. And we'll see you in Winnipeg in about a week's time or so.
Hey, look forward to it. Take care.
Happy holidays, Mike. Thanks very much.
You too.
Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Calgary Flames general manager Brad Treliving is going to join us at 2:30 this afternoon.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
I feel so honored and privileged to serve as a captain for 9 years for your Montreal Canadiens. I consider that as one of my greatest achievements of my career.
Saku Koivu at the Bell Centre in Montreal earlier this week, being honored by the Canadiens upon his retirement earlier this year. You know what I do like, and the Ducks are doing it later on in January as well. I like how they're now sort of booking these, you know, retirement ceremonies around the, with the opposition in mind, when they've played, you know, when the person being honored also played for the opposition. The Ducks waiting to honor Timu Solani until the Jets come to town early in January. I think that's a nice touch so that everybody can sort of participate in that ceremony. You know, always the Montreal Canadiens do a fantastic job when it comes to honoring mm-hmm. their past and saluting their players. And Saku Koivu was a key member of that team for a number of years and, you know, always held himself with such fantastic class when it came to representing the Montreal Canadiens. Sometimes in the face of obviously difficult circumstances, we remember what happened when he was diagnosed with cancer and the emotional ovation he got when he returned. And there was also that...
Nothing beat that ovation, guys. I mean, you remember that. I mean, how long did that last?
Eight minutes, I think. Yeah, I mean, 8 minutes of an ovation is... You know, you hear 8 minutes, you don't think it's that long of a time. But to stand up and applaud and cheer for somebody for 8 minutes is an incredible length of time.
I don't know if we've seen that since then.
We haven't. It's a connection. You know, John Beliveau's wife got an ovation for quite a long while, obviously honoring John Beliveau himself. It's... Saku Koivu's effect on the Canadiens, that obviously is a part of it, Drew, is how courageous he was to come back. It was against the Bruins that year in the playoffs. Just in general, the way he handled everything with grace and with just so much dignity. And he is... The pressure that he faced in Montreal, I think sometimes people overlook that, and they don't spend enough time focusing on the fact that you're talking about a European player, young Finnish player, taking the C in Montreal, where the pressure is to speak French, the pressure is to be really, before that, you know, it was Kirk Muller, I believe, was captain for a period of time there, but you want to be a French player, ideally, is, you know, who's well-versed in both languages, and he was able to take that responsibility, which many guys shy away from, in a hockey-mad market.
Hardest place to be a captain in the NHL.
It is, with English not being his first language. And just handling the pressure so well and then performing on the ice. And obviously the last few years he fell off a little bit, but he was a great two-way player before that. Tough. Played the game the right way. I just think that there aren't enough Saku Koivus out there. He didn't need the spotlight, didn't draw unnecessary attention to himself. Just a class guy. And they honored him as they ought to have. And he was just, you know, again, he wasn't a Hall of Fame player, but he was a real good player.
I think that the class that Saku Koivu represented was most evident. You know, obviously, it was great this week, but going back to when he was captain of the team and he got embroiled in that French language debate because he was the captain of the Montreal Canadiens and he didn't speak French. And, of course, that's an issue in Montreal for whatever reason. I don't want to get into the politics of it all. I mean, but he was unfairly criticized, to my mind. I think most reasonable thinking people's minds, you know, because he didn't speak French, and the way he handled that, he could have, you know, sort of stuck he could have said, you know, what do you want from me? I'm here to play hockey. I'm not here to be a political pawn. But I thought he handled it with grace, a far more grace than the people who were leveling him with these unfair accusations, I might add. But the way he handled it and the way he represented the Montreal Canadiens, I thought was truly fantastic over a number of years. A lot of lean years for the Montreal Canadiens organization in terms of the on-ice success as well. And he was able to just have that level of grace you don't often see.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%, Drew. And as Richie mentioned, too, when he was talking about Saku, I mean, he's not a guy that put up 100 points. He didn't bring the city a Stanley Cup. But he went out there every day, did his job, and he was kind of more of a quiet leader. But yeah, Saku is, who doesn't like Saku Koivu? I mean, you're talking about the type of player that, who wouldn't like the type of player Saku Koivu was, and was a very skilled offensive player. And I think, you know, getting back to what Richie was talking about, you know, with Saku Koivu and being the first European captain for the Montreal Canadiens, and I agree with you, Drew. There is a lot of pressure there to be captain, and it comes with you know, doing all of those things off the ice and being that someone in the community and all that. And he was a captain for a long time. You know, Brian Gionta just left for the Buffalo Sabres right now. So he was captain for far fewer years than Saku Koivu was there in Montreal. And, you know, it was a great ceremony. It was really nice to see. And, you know, pomp and circumstance, that's what Montreal does best. You watch those ceremonies and you get butterflies. I mean, this is what it's all about, right? And I think that in Montreal, it's a tough market to play in for many reasons. And I think that, you know, they will embrace a player who gives it all on the ice. And that's what I think this was all about. He was a great Montreal Canadian. He had some decent years with the Anaheim Ducks as well. But, you know, he was really thanked for all of those great years. And, you know, that you mentioned, you know, when he came back from non-Hodgkin's lymphoma and all that. And that stuff was just, I mean, that's incredible. He's just a good person and a good hockey player, but better person.
And I like the fact that the Habs honored him even though he isn't in the class of the other players skill-wise and performance-wise. Because they have such a great history in terms of, you know, Guy Lapointe just being honored so many different players of their past are reach levels that many players will never reach. Almost all players will never reach.
Sure.
But to at least honor a player that didn't reach those levels but still did it in the right way, I think is a nice touch.
Well, 14-year career for the Montreal Canadiens. Yeah. And I mean, just, you know, always held himself, like we said, with the grace and the aplomb that, you know, you don't usually see nowadays. A lot of players could learn from how Saku Koivu handled himself both in the good times and in the bad in Montreal. Here's Saku Koivu speaking to the Associated Press prior to the game against Anaheim. I always feel that I was respected as a player and for the way I played the game, mm-hmm. but what makes me feel humble was the way I was loved by the fans. Sometimes you think about why it happened, why they took me as their own. You can't explain it, but there has been a real unique bond between the fans in Montreal and myself. They've shown their passion and love and support throughout the years, and really, it's been amazing. You know, this is a guy who gets what it's all about, really, ultimately.
Well, also, even 10, 15 years ago now, guys, I mean, the players had more of a connection with the fans than they do now, especially with the social media. You think they have more of a connection? I think it's more of a distant connection than it used to be. Meaning they might have an ability to tweet at them and do whatever, you know, something like that, but the actual interaction in real life, because Twitter isn't real life, is less so now than before, and I think he was still part of that, you know, that previous generation in that way.
I agree with what you said there. Let's head to break. When we come back, Brad Treliving, general manager of the Calgary Flames, is hopefully going to be calling us this time. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
2:30 in the afternoon here on TSN 1290, online at TSN1290.ca. Following the conclusion of this program, we got some NFL football for you. NFL Saturday finally returns. Used to be a end-of-season tradition with some Saturday afternoon, Saturday evening games. They're bringing it back this year. Right after us, it's the Philadelphia Eagles and the Washington Football Disgraces. And then after that, it's the San Francisco 49ers against the San Diego
Chargers.
Niners
have been a disgrace this year, too.
Yeah. The Niners happened. As a disgruntled Niners fan there, Richard, you seem a little bit upset.
It's a terrible year.
Yeah. Big game for the Chargers, though, and I guess a big game for the Eagles, just the same. Both those teams need wins to stay in the NFC and AFC playoff picture, respectively.
Stick to hockey, Drew.
Alrighty. I know football, too. I'm multi-talented. You want to do some curling talk?
I don't want to win, lose, or Drew.
Yeah, we lost last night. It was upsetting. You know, had a good end and just... Our opponents made a nice shot and, you know, just couldn't come back.
Do you guys do 10 ends?
No, we generally play for about 2 hours, so generally get about six ends in.
It's like T-ball.
10 ends is a lot of curling. As somebody who's mainly there for the beer drinking,
yeah,
10 ends is a lot of curling.
Not surprised about that.
You can drink while you play?
Are you kidding?
That's why curling
exists.
Why am
I not in this league?
You just drink without playing anything.
It's true.
You know, you don't need to do any activity. You just drink. It's easier that way
for
you.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Anyways, we're hoping that Brad Treliving is going to be calling us at this point in time. We spoke to their PR people not that long ago.
Don't worry. We'll get some free pizzas if he doesn't appear.
There you go. Exactly. We'll get some free pizza as a result of it. In the meantime, let's talk for a couple minutes until Brad calls about the World Juniors. Obviously, Team Canada played last night their first, I guess, is this a pre-tournament game after the exhibition games against the CIS? Is that how they're...
There's too many pre-tournament games, as far as I'm concerned. You have maybe one, maybe two. You don't need four or five.
No, I agree. You don't need that many, but they play them because, you know, they sell out, you know, they'll have extra sellouts in Toronto, Montreal, and Ottawa.
Yeah. I was actually interested to see that Curtis Lazar made the team after. You know, we asked Dean Brown about that last week. He didn't think that Lazar would be made available, and now Lazar's available, and they're talking about him kind of being the leader of the team, and I think that's good for a team that has a lot of pressure in a Canadian market. It's a lot of pressure in playing in these markets. For Canada at any time, but especially playing in Toronto, Montreal, Lazar will be a nice addition there.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He's the Calgary Flames General Manager, Brad Treliving. Brad, good afternoon, and thanks very much for joining us.
How are you doing today, guys?
Doing very well. How about yourself, Brad?
Well, we've done better, but we're doing okay.
Yeah, exactly. A little bit of some struggles on the ice, and we'll get to that as we go through the interview. Wanted to start, obviously, with the decision to give the contract extension to Bob Hartley earlier this week. He gets a 2-year contract extension. When you got hired as general manager, did you have any previous relationship with Bob Hartley, or did you just come to know him through the respective jobs that you both now hold?
Yeah, no, I didn't, which is a little bit unusual in this business that you don't have a little bit of a relationship or know somebody. It's somewhat of a smaller network, but I didn't. I hadn't met Bob. I hadn't spent any time, and we didn't have a relationship. So really over the course of, you know, from my time arriving here, you know, through the summer training camp and through the first 2-3 months of the season here, that's been my introduction to Bob, and obviously with the news this week of our extension and contract extension with Bob, obviously shows that I think he's done a very good job here. You know, we're in a little bit of a downturn here right now that we're working our way out of, but I think, you know, not only the work that Bob did last year, but also this year, and just getting to know him and the work ethic and the time he puts in and the detail that he has to his job, I think it was very much deserving.
Brad, over the last 2 years, as you've gotten to know Bob Hartley more, what's impressed you most about him as a coach?
Well, I think, you know, ultimately, you're looking at where you are as an organization. I think, you know, as I look at this year and as we've already done in terms of introducing a lot of young players to our lineup, I think Bob's got a great ability to teach. I think he's got a great ability to put structure and organization within a team, and then there's the ability to push, but also that balance of, you know, pushing and building confidence, you know, a positive undertone while you're pushing these players. So I think he's very well organized. You know, a lot of times when you look at, you know, in terms of, you know, looking at coaches and detailing their work, a lot of the proof is in the way the team plays. And I look at, you know, some of the steps that our younger players have taken, even going back to watching a lot of this team a lot last year to going into this year, the way our team plays, I think, you know, two critical fingerprints for me from coaches on teams is how your team works and the consistency of that work ethic, and then ultimately the organization, the structure of your team and how they play. And I think Bob, you know, those are two things that stand out for me with the work that Bob's done with this team.
Hey, Brad, when did you approach Bob Hartley about the extension?
Well, we got it done here just the other day, and it was, you know, quite frankly, it was a short, you know, once we all, you know, the other part of this, as I said to guys, you know, as much as it was me trying to get a sense of Bob, I think that works both ways. Bob had to get a little sense. He didn't know me coming in. Mm-hmm. So I think there was a feeling out process on both sides. But, you know, probably a week or so ago, you know, I sat down with him and said, listen, this is what we want to do. We want to get this done. And, you know, it was shortly thereafter we were able to finalize everything.
You know, Brad, from an outsider's perspective, from like, negotiations with a coach, obviously different than a player, does Bob Hartley have an agent? And if he does or doesn't, how do the negotiations with the coach differ from that of a player?
Well, he did have, you know, really a lot of it was done with Bob and I, between Bob and I. You know, as he did have somebody help him out just there at the end when we were tidying up some things, but it's, you know, I think all negotiations to a certain extent are a little bit similar. You know, you're trying to put yourself and for myself, put, you know, whether it be a player, coach, you're trying to determine a marketplace, mm-hmm. And just, you know, see where different people are at, sort of get an agreement where you think you fit within the marketplace, and then, you know, get things finalized. So again, this one, I would say it was shorter than most player negotiations. I think coming in, we both had a pretty good idea of what the marketplace was, and I think a lot of it too was, you know, when you go through it in season, neither one of us wanted this to be an elongated process. We wanted to get to the, you know, we both, like I said, when you're starting at a very similar plane, I think there was, you know, a lot of similarities from both sides in terms of where we thought this thing should be and ended up being. So, again, it was quick and relatively painless.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Our guest is Brad Treliving. Brad is the Calgary Flames general manager. It's been about 7 months now, Brad, since you were hired in Calgary as their GM. What's the biggest difference between the organization structure in Calgary and the organization structure in Arizona, where you came from previously?
Well, I think there's, you know, obviously there's a lot of similarities around the league, but, you know, the different, obviously we're in a Canadian market here, and all the things that go along with that, probably most significantly is just probably the size of their staff. Obviously those, over the years that I was in Phoenix, I think it was very well documented in terms of, you know, the ownership saga that had happened there in the past. And we were, you know, for all intents and purposes, running on a fairly lean budget. And, you know, not that I think we're doing anything, outside of not necessarily the norm, but there's more people, you know, ultimately in terms of our scouting department, player development. You know, one of the things that we really wanted to emphasize coming in here is, you know, the draft and development philosophy, and, you know, we've been provided every resource possible from ownership here to make sure that we've got, you know, the right people in the right boxes here to produce and deliver on that mandate. So again, a lot of the same, at the end of the day, there's a lot of similarities from each organization, but I would say when you just, probably the biggest difference is just size of staff on the hockey side.
Brad, what's it been like for you personally, the transition to go from, I guess, less of a hockey market, even though it's a great hockey market in Phoenix, to go from there to the hockey mad community in Calgary? What's it like been for you personally to that transition?
Well, as you guys know, I think obviously, and I love my time in Phoenix. I think it's, you're right, it's, that fan base has been through a lot, and they've stayed with their team, and there's a real strong base of fans in Phoenix that have supported that team for many, many years. Obviously, coming to Canada, the place the game holds in each of the Canadian markets, the coverage, you know, the media, talking to fine folks like you more often than I did previously. So those are probably the biggest differences. At the end of the day, you know, it's the same game. You're trying to build an organization. You're trying to, you know, obviously the end goal here is to win. And you're going through that process. I think there is a real distinct process to get to that point of winning. So, you know, again, a lot of, you know, the bricks and mortars of getting that is similar regardless of where you are. But obviously there's more, in a lot of cases, more outside eyeballs on you. In a Canadian market, there's, you know, more media commitment, you know, than in a non-traditional market, if you will. So, and to me, those are all great things. I mean, those are, I think, anybody in this game, I think, just having been here for a short period of time, I think it's something that anybody in this game would want and should want to do, is work in a Canadian market with, like, to me, the juice that surrounds the game. It's the game is important, the team is important, and you know, you've got a lot of people covering it, dissecting it, and the pressure that goes along with that. But to me, that's exactly why you want to be involved in a market like this. So it's been enjoyable, and more than I ever imagined.
Our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show is Brad Treliving. Brad is the general manager of the Calgary Flames.
Brad, you know, obviously you guys are struggling a bit right now, but when you look at the roster, you have, you know, moving forward, guys like Sean Monahan, Johnny Gaudreau, and TJ Brody. How important is it, though, to have the veteran players surrounding them for times like this right now, where times are tough, you have to face the media, and it seems like nothing can go right?
Yeah, I think it's a really good point. I mean, obviously, I think having veteran players at any, you know, you sort of separate, having a veteran presence, if you will, you see it on the ice in terms of, you know, when you're going through choppy waters, those are guys that should be able to provide you stability, settle things down, you know, give you some stability in terms of getting back on your feet here and just getting us back to the point where, you know, they've had experience. You know, that veteran, you know, why you're a veteran is you've probably been through this on more than one occasion. So, you know, both in play and attitude and mindset, they can, you know, they can steer the ship. And so, you know, absolutely, when you're going through times like this, you need your veteran players to step forward. And I mean, both in terms of performance, but also both in terms of calming, you know, calming the room. In a lot of instances, and we're going through right now, a lot of these games that we've played, mm-hmm. you know, the frustrating part is we've played some good hockey. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a stretch here that we're, you know, we've played in a lot of cases as well, and in some cases better than we have during the stretch than we were winning games. But, you know, we're finding ways to have critical plays go against us at critical times, and so it's those veteran guys that have the experience, that have been through the league, to be a calming influence, but also be the people to step up. And you know, during times like this, you need, whether it be a goaltender performance, whether it's, you know, veteran guys to settle things down, to limit chances against, to create, score a big goal at a critical time. So you know, we've got a really, as you said, we've got some young kids that are going through the league for the first time and going through some adversity here for the first time, but we've got a really good group of veteran players, you know, not only players, but people. And, you know, we're going to lean on them. We need to lean on them at this time, and they've got to be the guys that sort of pull us through this.
Hey, Brad, as a GM, obviously, you're always trying to make your team better, and you look at the deadline being about, trade deadline being about 2 months away or so. From your position now as the main guy making those moves, do you think there's a lack of movement? The lack of movement is more attributable to the cap and the lack of space available for teams until later in the season, or is maybe more attributable to the fact that there's so much parity and that teams 8 through 23 basically think they have the same chance of making the playoffs?
Well, both. Quite frankly, it's a difficult, you know, for all intents and purposes, yes, there's the ability to make trades, and we do see them. Obviously not at the rate that maybe we did years ago. And I think, you know, those two topics you touched on are a big reason why it's hard to find matches. You know, you may be going out and looking for a specific type of player to fit in a certain role. And then once you identify that player, you know, you've got to have, first of all, you've got to have a dance partner. And then, you know, money plays a big role in it. You know, whether, you know, you see it now where teams that maybe are cap teams, the teams that have cash, and there's a difference between cap and cash. You know, you may have teams that have cash, but, you know, they're up against the cap and don't have any room.
Right.
The team that has room doesn't necessarily, aren't in a position to take on cash. So finding that partner from a financial standpoint, but then also from a personnel standpoint that has the right piece you're looking for, and vice versa. And then the parity piece, I think, is absolutely, you know, you look at the league right now, and it's, you know, it's still, there's still a lot of hockey to play, but You know, if you go back historically the last few years, you get to the deadline, it's not like you've got 10 teams that are out of it. You've, mm-hmm. you know, you've got a, you've got the majority of the league is either, you know, hovering right a point or two around the playoff line, and it's a difficult process to go into your room or go into your market and say, okay, we're a point out or a point in, now we're going to gut the team. So it's, I think those two areas are, there's other factors, but I think those two areas are really the main points of trying to find matches that fit from a cap and from a financial standpoint. And then you're right, you know, if you've got so many buyers, if there's a depleted sellers list and you've got a lot of buyers, sometimes it's hard to make and find matches.
Brad Treliving is the general manager of the Calgary Flames. Brad, we really appreciate your time this afternoon, and best of luck in tonight's game in Vancouver.
Appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks very much, Brad. Happy holidays. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. When we come back, one final segment for the year 2014 on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Big thank you to Brad Treliving, general manager of the Calgary Flames, for joining us on the program. In case you missed any of that, it'll be available for download on iTunes, on TSN1290.ca, and of course on our website, illegalcurve.com. One final segment for the year 2014. Next week, we are off, in that we're all actually out of town, as it happens. So no Illegal Curve Hockey Show next Saturday, and NHL Midweek is on hiatus, of course, until the new year as well, given that the Wednesday is both Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve, and of course the Jets and the Islanders will play on New Year's Eve, thus preempting us. Not to say you won't hear a lot of us, though. Ezzy's doing pre and post a few times in the next...
Thrice, three times in the next
six games. And Richie, you're doing some color analysis on the Minnesota Wild home game and then the New York Islanders home game on New Year's Eve.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be great.
There you go. So even though the actual show may not air, you'll still can't get rid of us that easily.
Oh, we can get rid of you.
You can get rid of me. I got nothing to do. I'm just going to go take another couple weeks off, you know. I'll be sitting there crying, wondering where everybody is. I'm, you know, up in the press box all by myself, you know. Nobody's going to pay any attention to me. Well,
Remus, wait a minute,
would actually sort of be standard operating procedure.
Are we going to talk about Remus's pedicure or not?
I want to start with the fact that Remus's hoodie is currently being held together by duct tape.
Yeah, Remus, you need to wear another hoodie. I don't even care if it's your Saturday hoodie, as you called it.
Yeah, it's Saturday. We're on the radio. Who cares?
You have duct tape as a zipper.
It's holding it together.
I'm not sure that's held together.
You know that you can get, like, zippers can be replaced with working zippers.
Well, I just have the, you know, the handle.
So let's talk more about the pedicure.
Well, let's just talk about it in general. We haven't talked about it to begin with.
You got a little shiny buff?
Yeah, I don't know if I got the shiny buff, but you know what? Pedicure is great. I think I recommend them to everyone.
Do you get the manicure too?
No, not this time.
Did you get the pedicure because you're going out of town, you're going to be wearing a lot of sandals? Is that why?
I don't know. The girlfriend, she wanted to go, and I just tag along.
Hashtag Leah is running the show.
Laying down the law. I don't blame her, though. I mean, you know, you're going to be wearing a lot of sandals. Nobody wants to see disgusting man feet.
Yeah, have you seen those feet?
No, mine are actually really nice. I got complimented by the girl who did the pedicure.
I feel like the girl,
you know, they
always
work on tips, right?
I feel like they always compliment the guys who's going for the first pedicure.
Yeah.
That wasn't my first one. It was actually my third one.
What about the other two? Leah hasn't been in the picture that long.
No, I don't know. It's
wrong. Hold on. Remus. You went for a pedicure when you didn't have a girlfriend?
Yeah, one was after Folkfest. I mean, the feet get pretty mangled at Birds Hill Park.
Let's go to cheers and jeers, and we'll finish off 2014. So.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And jeers.
No, not good enough.
He's a bad boy.
I never seen something like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Richard Pollock.
I'm going to cheer the 13 people out there who actually listen to our show. No, but I'm going to cheer the listeners. We obviously do appreciate anybody who does listen, and we are thankful that people do give their time to put us in their car, on the internet, or on their phone, or whatever it may be.
Yeah, we do appreciate that. Well said. Ezzy, cheer and cheer. Well, just cheer Marty Brodeur for something, and we'll get
it. No, I mean, I would love to cheer, knowing that Remus has now had 3 pedicures in his life. Maybe he's onto something now. He's got a girlfriend and I don't. So, I mean, yeah, but...
You went for a facial last week. So, again, you know, you don't have much of a road to travel
on. Detox facial. And okay. I've been told I've been told my skin's looking better than ever. But
well, that's good because you also need to go to detox in general. So you know, we're halfway there.
Oh. It was a low blow.
Thank you.
You know what? On the topic, this is our last show of 2014. I'll cheer our listeners, you know, people that listen to the show online and everything.
But
we've got some great fans and people are always, you know, coming up to us and talking to us, whether, you know, it's around the MTS Center or out for a pint after the game. So, you know, we've got great listeners. We love doing this. And 2014 was a great year, and we're looking forward to 2015 as always. It's going to be an even better year.
Absolutely. I'll echo what you guys said, and thank you very much to everybody who's listened to us 2014, all the years before, and going forward to 2015. We hope only bigger and better for everybody here and you at home as well. That's it for this episode of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thank you to our guest, Frank Saravelli of the Philadelphia Daily News. Big thank you to Brad Treliving of the Calgary Flames, the general manager, and Mike Greenlay, Minnesota Wild color analyst. In case you missed any of the show, it will be available for download on iTunes, on tsn1290.ca, and of course on our website, illegalcurve.com. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, and of course, Bernstein's Deli. For producer Michael Remus and for producer Chris Curry, thank you to both you gentlemen for the hard work you put in. For Ezra Ginsberg and Richard Pollock, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. Thanks again for listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. All the best, and we'll see you when we return on January the 3rd, 2015.
You've been listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
Catch the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca.